You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely fantastic news from the flight deck. I'm Al Waterloo. It is 8 p.m. in the Central Time Zone, and that could only mean one thing. And I would look at Mark normally and try to figure out what that actually is. But, Mark, are you there?
I am.
Holy
Where
cow.
Are you?
I don't know. Where are you?
I'm over. Well, actually, the only thing I can tell you is Oscar Bravo Kilo.
Didn't you get the memo? Is it Tango November today?
I guess I didn't.
Oh, man.
What is it with you now? And people are already saying, oh, Mark's on that crappy microphone again. Every time you take a trip, you take my microphone, you take my headset, I'm on a little plastic job, and they think, boy, that Al sounds so good, and Mark sounds so yuck.
Well, hello.
Why'd you do that to me?
Well, hey, I think you sound great.
Oh, okay. Good.
Especially on
do.
Sunday nights, Simple Flight Radio.
It's a great thing, isn't it?
It is. I can't believe it's already 8 o'clock again tonight. And unfortunately, you and I are not face-to-face. But, like we always said last time, we got split up. The show must go on, just like the post office. And, hey, we're here to deliver.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things we talk about looking forward to it. And I was thinking earlier, in a former job, and it was not aviation related, I got to the point, even though it was a good company, I have to admit, I started getting up on Saturday morning and saying, oh, God, I got to go to work in 2 days. I mean, that's when you know you need a new job.
Yeah.
And Simple Flight just gives me a reason, besides now liking what I do on Monday morning. But just this radio show, I look forward to Sunday nights, and hopefully our listeners do as well, and that they find some enjoyment. And if they aren't as happy on Monday morning, at least they have this to look through.
Exactly. Well, you know what? I got two responses to that. Well, one, we got the most ultimate compliment the other day. We had somebody that said that this Simple Flight, they replay it. They don't listen to us live, but they replay it in the morning on their drive to work, and it helps with their road rage.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So we bring value to the world.
Yeah, during the Monday morning commute. And I must say that Monday morning or Sunday nights were my favorite, or the times that I hated most during the week as a kid, because, hey, your homework was probably not done. You weren't happy with it, and you had a hint of a sore throat, and you had to go to bed for a whole long week of sixth grade schoolwork along, you know, for the rest
sixth
of the week.
Grade, like that was every Sunday night? Sixth
yeah.
grade was the sixth grade was the best 3 years of your life?
It felt like it. But anyway, I'm glad we've got that down. So Sunday nights, we've got a reason to look forward to it now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely is right. But anyway, welcome to the show. It's Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner with us again.
Did you change my name?
Yeah, Hot Mike. But
yeah,
anyway, it's we're glad.
I spell my name M-A-R-C. I don't know if I ever told you this, but I've been married for something like 34 years. And
congratulations.
My wife, a few years ago, and she's not listening because she hates when I bring it up. She spelled my name M-A-R-K. I've been M-A-R-C for as many years as I've been alive, and she spelled it wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, what do you do about that? I don't know. Do I...
You just let it roll. Let it slide.
I guess so. Get over it, right?
Yeah, I had your name misspelled in my phone for the longest time. And it was, I had it with the C, but I had Eppner spelled wrong. There was an I somewhere in there, but I digress, and we digress as I'm in Trenton, New Jersey tonight, freshly diverted from Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and you're broadcasting live near the Northbrook VOR, aren't you?
Yeah, it's, don't ask me why, but Northbrook VOR is not located in Northbrook. Northbrook VOR is located in Vernon Hills, Illinois. I happen to live near there, so yeah, that's where we're I'm broadcasting from. And it's not as good as when we're at Papa Whiskey Kilo.
No, but, it's always nice being out there on the ramp or on our conference room, which is now converted to a radio studio.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love that place. As a matter of fact, I started to pitch a tent there.
Absolutely. I hope we didn't have any live studio audience that like to show up. We've been getting quite a following as well.
Yeah, actually, there was someone on Twitter that started following me and mentioned that they'd be at Papa Whiskey Kilo. I don't think today. I think it's next week. And I said, hey, if you're going to be there, it's 8 p.m. on Sunday night. Stop by the show and be in our new studio audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But anyway, I hope hope if anybody's around, you're more than welcome to stop by our live studio audience on Sunday nights. And then also, if you can, join us for dinner beforehand. But anyway, Mark, how was it? How was your week this week for flying?
Well, it was good, aviation related. On Friday, I was invited to a very special event. One of our members has a very prominent aviation father.
Yeah,
who owns a couple P-51s, a Citation, lots of different airplanes, and is very generous in terms of helping to restore and reclaim old military airplanes. And so on Friday, there was, and I hope I got this right, an F-2 Wildcat, which sunk some 68 years ago in Lake Michigan off of Glenview Naval Air Station. They were practicing carrier takeoffs and landings. And on this, I wish I had the guy's name, I don't, but on his third takeoff, engine died and the plane went into the lake. He got out and lived. But the plane landed at the bottom of Lake Michigan upside down. And on Friday, the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, they had been pulling it from something like 65 miles out on a barge slowly, and it arrived at Waukegan Harbor, and I was given a VIP pass to be up and close and personal, touch it and all that as they raised it out of Lake Michigan and put it down. So it was pretty cool, and the sponsor was the first person to sit in it. They put a little cushion down in plastic wrap.
Nice.
So he said it still had the stick in it. I didn't wait around to go take a look inside, but it had rudder pedals. Most of the body, the tail had broken off, but they had that up. And even when they put it down on the wheels, water started squirting out of the inflate valve because there had, I guess, had water between the tube and the wall of the tire. But the original air was still in the tires, so I thought
you
that
gotta be kidding
cool.
me.
No, no, I didn't smell it, but it's still in there, so it probably smelled better. So I did some other aviation things, but that certainly had to be a highlight of my week. I really consider it a once in a lifetime event to be able to see them reclaim an old warbird from underwater, and very excited and pleased that I was invited.
Yeah,
how about you?
That sounds great. Well, one thing, or I want to touch on that real quick. Well, first of all, I saw your videos that you posted on SparkReel, which were pretty cool of that. And then also we had, I found it very interesting that, hey, if you have a lot of money and then you want to, you know, you want your old warbird, you can't, you can go out and fish it up, but as soon as you bring it to the surface, the Navy reclaims it. So it's properly the Navy. Yes, yeah, so you can't just go out and say, hey, I found a P-51 at the bottom of the lake. Go out and buy, pull it up and then, take it over. It's the military says, hey, we own that and we want it back. That's what's happened to this one, the airplane that was pulled up on Friday.
Yeah, well, he had pulled up another one previous to this, and it ended up in some museum, I think, in Florida, and this one will as well, I think, of. I'm not sure if you know, but I think it's more local. So he's not planning to fly it. He just wants to display it so other people can see it. And as I understand it, there's some 200 airplanes at the bottom of Lake Michigan. And based on what I was reading, they're getting to the point where they may not be recoverable. So we need to save as many of them as possible for posterity's sake.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Hats off to him. The gentleman who pulled it up. So that was.
And that I don't think there's any problem. I mean, he was on the news and all. It's Charles Greenhill.
Yeah.
Chuck, to those that know him, and he makes a lot of people see him again. With he brings a couple P-51s to Oshkosh each year. So yeah. Thank you, Chuck. Real service to the aviation community and the world beyond.
Absolutely, very very yeah. cool. Well, I had a I had an interesting week in aviation this week. It was my triumphant return from flight safety, and my coworkers and I, who fly the King Air with me, we had a kind of like a little. A little heart-to-heart and said, hey, you know, what can we do to fly this airplane better? So we've been on the road this entire week, and, we've implemented a lot of that. So I tell you what, we haven't done much, but our level of preparation is much, much more thorough, and, it's very comforting and all that. So we had a really good feeling about, these flights that we've been doing this week, and it kind of, the pinnacle of all of our flights was the one that we just completed about an hour ago, believe it or not. We flew from Palwaukee, Chicago Executive, all the way out to Doylestown, had to divert to Trenton. The weather went low, and there was a lot of ice that we had to contend with, probably some of the most severe icing that I have dealt with in my career.
What altitude were you at when you picked that up?
Well, we were descending into the Philadelphia area. We were at about 15,000 feet. And one of the places I really like to look for the first signs of ice is on the spinner, believe it or not. You can
sure.
see like a little discoloration, and it's sitting right there, right at eye level in the King Air. And I had a little flashlight, and this thing was just covered in ice, and our boots were... the leading edges were all caked up, so we were popping the boots, every couple minutes, and it was good.
Well, and I am not as familiar with it as you are, but when you popped the boots, so everything was cool, but the way you talked about it made me think, God forbid, like the Colgan Air, when the guy says, oh, I've never seen this much ice, does it ever get so much that the boots are ineffective?
We haven't gotten to that point yet, but...
a good thing.
I don't want to get to that point, but yeah. This was probably the most ice accretion that I've dealt with in the King Air, as well as I think ever in my flying career, and that was just a good wake-up call. We definitely did not feel comfortable hanging out, so we were talking with New York Center at the time and asked to drop down, and they were very accommodating. And by the time we got to about 9,000 feet, we were about +1, +2 degrees, and that was just enough to start cleaning the wings off. There are other guys out there, airliners reporting clear ice.
Ouch!
That's
scary.
That is scary, but it was good. It was really great learning experience.
Well, speaking of that, and that maybe my little experience today. Should we wait for hangar talk?
Yeah, let's bring that up then.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So I have to admit, and you told me that you'd be gone today, and I thought, I got to get things ready, and I'm a little behind. I wasn't able to prepare a really good Sunday night chuckle, but I did have an epiphany of sorts, and wasn't feeling well, a long time ago. It's not like today or anything. And I wanted to ask you a question, because I finally figured out what's the difference between an oral thermometer and a rectal thermometer.
Oh, my goodness. Probably lots.
Well, no, only one thing, the taste.
Wow.
Okay. I wanted to make you smile tonight with a little Sunday night chuckle, and even though it really wasn't aviation related, I just felt like, that's going to do it for him tonight.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that sounds like something went wrong on your aviation medical.
Yeah, don't say that. I got to have that next whip month in January.
Talk about bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I hate this, especially as you get older. You're still very young, and you even admitted to me you kind of don't think about those things. And guys my age, every year, and because I take a pill that requires me to get a medical every year, you worry about it. Like, are they going to find something?
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to take care of myself, but I enjoy life as well, which means I eat sugar and I don't work out as much as I need to. So I just, I don't know.
Yeah, well.
It's as we all know, flying is too important to us to have something happen that'll take it away from us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I have a, I wanted to give you a little taste of what the weather is out here.
Here we go, had, talking about taste again.
Yeah, ugh. Yeah, not, you know, this isn't sugar and spice or rectal thermometer taste. I guess it's a, I guess, I don't know what kind of, this is a taste of the weather. And you'll see that, you understand that packing only a windbreaker or a North Face fleece was necessary on this trip. But it's kind of balmy out here. I want to let you know what we were contending with. Let's see.
Airport. Automated weather observation, 0216 Zulu. Wind calm. Visibility.
Nimble fingered L.
Sky condition over 100. Temperature 04 Celsius.
4 degrees.
2.04 Celsius.
It's 4 degrees.
Altimeter 3005.
005 on the altimeter.
Thunderstorm information not available.
Yeah, so that was it. That was the weather report. It was overcast at 400. Temperature 4, dew point 4, and altimeter is 3005.
So just to explain myself, people, I couldn't hear that. So and when we do this remote things, I'm disconnected from what you hear. So I thought nothing was playing, and that's why I was giving Al some some crap. So it actually played on air, and I just
absolutely
didn't.
Yeah, you turn right up your hearing aid. Yeah. Now I know that you had. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have a hearing aid, but.
No, I
had to.
Not.
I had to get a wise joke in there, but anyway, this was kind of a neat night to fly, and but this is 2012. Do you think there were any other things that were that happened in aviation that were pretty neat and on
every
this day?
Yeah, something has happened. Even I would say almost every year. But you and I like to pick out some of the more momentous ones and go back a little bit in time. So. Actually, I'm going to turn it over to you first. Tell me what you found for this day in aviation history.
Well, this is cool because we talked about this one, a derivative of this one a couple shows ago. And I was so surprised in how, you know, I thought the time frame on this was a lot later than it was. But back in 1946, the first powered flight by the Bell X-1 took place.
Wow.
Yeah, December 9th. 1946.
That was even before I was born.
Now you're dating yourself.
Yeah, no one else would date with me.
Yeah, but I was surprised at how soon, or well, how early.
Recent.
Recent. Well, not recent, but I thought, you know, when the sound barrier and the Bell X-1,
yep.
You know, that I was thinking 60s, but no, it was in the late 40s.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, you're right on that. It's, you know, it's very tough for me because I try and remember. Now, did I remember that happening in the 60s because I was there for the 60s? So I think you and I have a little different perspective. But you're right, 1946 does seem a long time ago to accomplish something like that.
Right.
Well,
absolutely.
What do you think happened on this day in 1909?
The Titanic sank.
I think that was 19. Is that 1914?
I don't know.
And that was April, also.
Bummer.
But we'll just do this every week, and then 1 week you'll be right.
Someday I'll get it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like a stop clock is right twice a day.
Yeah. Exactly.
So in 1909, and this is not anything to do with the Wright brothers, although the Wright brothers were in the news. And I will even go with that one, too. But in 1909, an American, Dr. Henry W. Walden, he made the first flight of a monoplane. And he took off from Mineola, New York.
Really?
And this, yeah. Now, again, the Wright brothers back then were doing something every day. In 1904, they ended the trial runs with Flyer 2 after conducting 105 tests and 80 brief flights since they began flying that new machine. So in 1909 we had the first flight of a monoplane. In 1904 they were just shutting down the Flyer 2 after all that time. So those were kind of neat things associated with December 9th.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's perfect. Nice work.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Good find, too.
You know, when you go away, I have to really put my gear, my game in gear, and so sometimes the cream rises to the crop. And sometimes not.
Yeah, well, I'm usually the sometimes not exception.
We all are, believe me. Yeah. Sunday nights, you know, as much as we look forward to it, it's tough to get prepared for the show, and of course we love doing it, but I think people realize that this isn't like something we just show up and throw up or anything like that.
There's a lot of hard work and thought that goes into this. This is a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, it's whatever that commercial for, well, I think it was the National Guard, you know, the hardest work you'll ever love or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, maybe that could be our new slogan.
Yeah, we got to come up with something new. Yeah, right. Do we need a new slogan?
No, I think finding amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.
Yeah, and I think we're doing that tonight too. You know, it's the definition of amazing is different things to different people, and sometimes it changes meanings. And our show tonight, you know, we're focused on someone that's maybe on the forefront, on the leading edge, if you will, of doing that. Not a name that people have heard a lot of, but you know, just like some of the other people we've been able to introduce to them, we're going to see some big things.
Absolutely. And the neat thing is that, so you've talked about, you know, or we spent some time on the phone with this gentleman before we before the show went live. But you know, this is a great example of, you know, we joke around about age on this show quite a bit, and you know, that as soon as, you know, the nice thing is that aviation is the bonding agent for us, and you know, that throws all the age barriers out the window, and you know, it's like we're one big happy family, you know, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, well, and it's not just age. I mean, truly, if you think about it, and aviation isn't the only thing, but the only thing that does this, but it's really unifying across, you know, and I hate to get, again, as I always say, wax poetic, but it's beyond age, beyond gender, beyond race, beyond religion, all of those things, when it comes to aviation, we're all the same.
Yeah.
And it's really, really cool. You know, we all have that spark, whether people fly today or not, or whether they want to fly or not. If you love aviation, it's just something really, really special.
Absolutely. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But our guest,
I feel good.
I feel good. Nah, 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 nah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but I knew I would. Okay.
we shouldn't quit our day jobs just based on that, that's for sure. But anyway, our guest tonight, Mr. Ian Hoyt, he's the CEO and founder of Heading 370. And you mentioned that, you know, we brought up this age differential, and I want to point out something really cool about Ian, and he's 19 years old.
19 and CEO. I love that sound.
I know, isn't that sound? You know, if I were, I wish I was a CEO in college, and hopefully that would have brought more opportunity with the ladies.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I said before, sometimes when I hear that, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, it almost makes me feel inadequate, but it's truly is a different world, and I sound like my parents would have, but who would have thought about being CEOs of companies? You know, when I grew up, it was either I was going to be an air traffic controller or a pilot, and when those didn't work out, you know, get into sales and work hard and make money, but it wasn't about starting my own company, and I don't know if it was my upbringing or what, but it just seems like the youth of today are so much more entrepreneurial and innovative, and maybe because it's all technology-based, but it's just really, really cool, and I wish we had had that when I was growing up, and maybe we did, and I just didn't know it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, I think that's the neat part about it, and, you know, that's kind of the cool thing. You know, a lot of young entrepreneurs out there, specifically Ian, being such a young guy and in college, and trying to go at it, especially in aviation. That's kind of the neat part about that. And can you get him on the line, Mark? And we'll introduce him to everybody. He's got a great voice for radio.
Well, he's got a great microphone, unlike me tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to add him right now.
All right. Well, let's get him on the line and hear what he's got going on at heading 370.
I love that name. Hey, Ian, are you there with us? Ian? Oh, wait a minute. I think I did something wrong.
Uh-oh.
Right? Okay.
See, this is one it would be nice to have, like, a soundboard with, like, cheesy elevator music or the Jeopardy theme song.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
There he is.
How's it going?
Okay, Ian, I've got to know whether you tell me now or after. I've got to get the microphone you're using.
All right. It's actually from the Makers Blue. I can give you a link later on.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it's... Well, I'm not going to say what I was just going to say. That'll also be later. Anyway, so welcome, Ian. Glad you can join us, Ian Hoyt.
Thanks for having me.
Heading 370. Tell us a little bit about 370. Introduce yourself to our listeners, and we'll take it from there. So go ahead.
First of all, I just wanted to say that joke was phenomenal. Made up for the past episodes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
But... my name's Ian Hoyt, like you guys introduced me. I am the founder and owner of Heading 370. I started flying flight sim, actually, when I was about 12 or 13. But I took my first lesson when I was 15. And since then, it's, you know, been a love for aviation. And the big thing was I wanted to share aviation and all my experiences with others. And so that's what I try to do on a daily basis to the aviation community, I guess. Heading 370 is a company, or is actually a classifieds website right now that we plan to implement to give the buyer and sellers the easiest way possible and the cheapest and most efficient website to get their aircraft sold, or to find an aircraft that they want.
Nice. So that is that. What are some equivalent websites to Heading 370 right now? You know,
there are none.
All right, okay. That's awesome. So that's a
groundbreaking. I love it.
Groundbreaking. So, but I guess one thing that I always think about is like trade a plane, right?
Yeah.
What's going to be is, you know, trade a plane has been around for a long time, but. I think that definitely this needs to be refreshed and, modernized, bringing buying and selling airplanes. You know, that's a huge thing.
Definitely. One of my friends that I always go to for advice when I'm in a bind about company stuff and whatsoever, if I ever need a second opinion, he always asks me what's going to set this apart from what's already out there and what's going to make people want to come to my site. And that's exactly what the concept I'm trying to run on is. We're in a world, in a classifieds world in the aviation industry that is set in the 1990s. And I'm trying to bring it so it's, you know, in the 2000s and it's up to date. And our pricing scheme and, you know, how we're going to run our business is totally different than most of the sites. So it's not necessarily we're competing directly for them. We're just trying to add a different concept to the classifieds network out there already.
So how will that exhibit itself then to a user? How will they know, you know, maybe describe for our listeners what that means? Why is it different from what they see in a trade-a-plane or a controller.com, that kind of thing?
Right. So we have basically 3 to 4 core values that we're trying to work on that we believe is going to be the breaking point or the turning point for the website. And those would be like the pricing. There's sites out there that, you know, you'll either pay a membership fee for a month or for a year that can get pretty pricey. And it's understandable because you're trying to sell an aircraft. I understand this. But our pricing is going to be a flat rate. And right now we're looking at perhaps $1 or something around that for one post. And it's all inclusive up to about 20 pictures, almost all the text you will actually ever need, and then, you know, it's all inclusive, so you don't have to pay per thing you want or more pictures or whatnot. That's one of the attributes. Another attribute is the search functionality for users that are trying to find their airplanes. We have been through multiple classifieds websites, and this is something that's really lacking, I think, in this category of aviation. Going to a site and trying to simply find what you want, you wouldn't believe the amount of websites out there that it takes a lot of effort just to find the aircraft you want. So we're going to implement very easy searchable ability across the website so you can easily navigate. And then the third core value is user interactivity. So what this means is we're going to make it simple for the buyer to be in contact with the seller within the site. You will have the option to contact outside of the site as well, but we give you the simple option of being notified and contacting and messaging within the site already.
I think that's actually a really key and a very valuable point, because I got to say that I've got a gripe with a lot of these search engines and classified arenas.
Same here.
Buying and selling airplanes, but every time you go out and try to contact these people for more information, you know, it's like your message or your phone call or email goes off into airplane buying heaven. You know, there's nowhere to it just disappears. Nobody ever gets back to you. It's very, very frustrating.
Yes, and I mean, from personal experience, this is what has evolved, because I've tried using other classifieds websites, and obviously I won't get into the details of what websites, but the thing about it is you're emailing, you don't know who, but it would be nice to put, you know, a social profile to the person that you want to interact with and do business with. So it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of sort of social, if you want to be, / user interactivity within the site to make it a fun experience, a quick experience, and an efficient experience.
You know what? Wow. That's actually pretty cool. Mark, we have a club member, a good friend of ours, who just recently bought an airplane. And, you know, it's one thing that really stuck out in my mind while, you know, hearing him talk about his buying experience, is it's really cool to talk to the owners of these airplanes, because, you know, one, they have really cool stories. These things, you know, these airplanes, they love just as much as you know, the next guy will, and you know they want to share the stories behind that. So that's actually, I didn't realize you're doing that. That's awesome to make like a little community and, you know, social interaction between that. I don't know if that's the point of sharing stories about the airplane or whatnot, but heck, we're all pilots and we should all be friends.
Yeah, and that's tapping into my wanting to share aviation, because I know almost, and I had to preface almost all aviation. Pilots and anyone in aviation like to talk about aviation with others and interact and share stories and whatnot. So I wanted to really make a social way for people to interact like that. So yeah, you hit on it perfectly.
Seems like everything today is the social aspect, and that's what the internet brings. So kudos to you for incorporating that into, like you say, something that seems to be stuck in the 90s.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that's a, I think a lot of people, you know, and I'll go out there and just say it. Hey, I go on these websites a lot, and just for recreation, and you know, I'm bored on the internet or something like that. I'll just go to a lot of these search websites and go on to eBay and the auction, and just look at airplanes for sale.
Kind
of that.
Kind of like your aviation porn.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And, yep.
Bingo, yeah.
Another attribute I'd like to mention real quick is we're not sure if we're going to launch this in our first version of the site, but we also are looking to have some type of rating system for every exchange that a user does between a buyer and seller. So you can review the buyer and seller, others can see out of business.
Wow, I'm hearing buzzes. Someone's getting a call.
All right. Nobody. I'm not.
Okay. No problem. Really, it wasn't me either. So, sorry I interrupted on that. Go ahead, Ian.
Oh, no, I was done speaking.
Okay, there you go. Well, I have to ask in a little bit of a digression, and I think I know the answer, but I'm still going to ask you, where did the name Heading 370 come from?
When I was younger, when I was about 13, I started a product website for aviation products. It was runway 37 left. I could realize that 13, you can't really, it's really hard to get a concept of business, so I stopped that. But I've always had an infatuation with the punny 370 because there is no such thing type joke. So that's how I came up with heading 370.
All right. Yeah, that's cool. I thought you were going to say because it's all about doing something in a new direction. And
I might use that.
Okay, well, that's all right. There's a royalty associated with it, but
yeah.
I think it's very Willy Wonka. You know, it's just kind of like it's cool. It's like the new dimension. I like it.
Yeah, very very cool.
Absolutely. Hey, I got a real quick. I got a question from a listener right now. And he wants to know, you know, what should you look for in terms of buying an airplane? I know this, are you going to incorporate, like, recommendations on saying, hey, if there's a three-year-old airplane on your website for sale and it's got 6,000 hours, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Are you going to give guidance or kind of some do's and don'ts for aircraft buying on your website?
I definitely think that is something that has potential. I've thought about that before, and I think that's something to integrate. Obviously, not when we push off right at the beginning. It's going to be a building stage for this website since it is sort of a new concept for classifieds. But yeah, that's definitely a positive attribute. The only thing I would say that would go against that concept would be the fact that you could build that interaction with the previous user, and it sort of is difficult for us to say what is good and what is not because each aircraft is different in, you know, its age and whatnot. So it's very discretionary. You know, there's that envelope of we can't really judge, if you know what I'm saying. But we definitely will provide materials, hopefully in the short run, for people to get educated about buying aircraft and what they should look for.
Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a good point. You know, you're not necessarily AMPs, and it's all these airplanes have their own stories behind everything. And, you know, I think that's really something that should be up to the owner and the potential buyer and the transactions mechanics, I guess, to really determine that.
Yeah, and we will have, I'm working on an active blog for the website, so we'll be posting stuff in there as well for buyer seller.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great.
So we've talked a little bit about and heard in your voice will be coming soon, all of that. What kind of date are we looking at where we're going to see this thing launch in all its glory?
We originally thought the beginning of 2013, January. But that could get pushed back, maybe a month or a month and a half, just due to some designing, and we want to get it, you know, semi-correct for launch. So,
what a concept.
It's very difficult to put a timeline when, we have to test it out and all that fun stuff. So
absolutely. Well, I've always had a saying, and I don't know, I think I learned it from either a brother or a father, but if you don't have time to do it right, what makes you think you have time to do it over?
Yeah.
So, exactly right. You're good to wait.
We don't make promises, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, you could always just say it's going to be January, just maybe January 45th or something like that.
Exactly.
That fit in with the heading 370 concept.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That inspired me to build an RV. He finished his RV, but I would always ask him, when is his RV going to be done? And he always said Tuesday. He never specified. He just said Tuesday. So,
who was this that you were talking about?
I'm sort of my mentor and inspiration to start flying. He's built it. He just finished his RV, his van's RV. So,
yeah. How long did that take him?
3 years.
That's quick. Yeah, that is quick. Everyone I've talked to that have built airplanes, it seems like it takes a decade.
It was his baby for 3 years. He was so dedicated. That's how he is, though. So,
but you said you're building one, so how long is it going to take you to build yours?
Depends on money.
Yeah, there you go.
We need Haddock 370 needs to hurry up. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
that's cool. So where are you building this, and where are you building it? Is it in your dorm or?
I wish.
Yeah, right. That'd be pretty cool.
It's in my garage actually, back home. So I'm working on the tail. I almost have it done after a year. I had never built anything in my life, really. So it was a whole new learning curve, but I've learned so much through the build. It's just been a great experience.
Yeah, that's
are
awesome.
You leaning on some kind of association, whether EAA or other RV builders, to kind of get it right since this is your first experience?
Oh, yeah. Well, my sponsor for the tools, Cleveland Aircraft Tools, helped a bunch in that department. And then we have Vans Aircraft forums, the Vans Air Force forums that are a great tool. And then my mentor that I was just talking about that just finished his RV, he's helped me the most. And it's been great to have so many people around wanting to help you out.
That's really cool.
Right.
Hey,
it
speaking of, home builds, we mentioned this on the show last night, or last week, excuse me. But the BD5J, the microjet. I went and started looking that up, and I'm like, wow, you know, I got sucked in with YouTube videos, and I was trying to figure out if there's any, if there are any out there that I could buy, but it looks like they, the kits are sold off and on. Right now it's an off period, but man, that would be an awesome airplane. I kind of want to build one of those.
You should, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm with you, buddy. I tell you what, that BD-5J, and people that saw the movie, I think it was the James Bond movie, Octopussy.
Yeah.
He flew through a hangar in a BD-5J microjet.
Yeah.
And that was just so cool. They also have a BD-5 with a pusher prop on the back, but man, that little...
The jet would be awesome. I was reading some of the specs. It's like it's got a 350 nautical mile range up to 300 miles an hour. Talk about something pretty cool.
I could have made it to Iowa City today.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys should do that as a project for the show.
Yeah, I like where your head's at.
Yeah, I do too.
Can we buy the kit off of Heading 370?
There you go.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Exactly.
So Heading 370, it's classified. Is there any other aspects to it, or is it really focused on the exchange, if you will, or the acquisition of aircraft?
Oh, that's a great question, because I'm sure a lot of people are confused by that. Right now, we are focusing almost 100% on the classifieds website. But no, it's going to be much more than the classifieds. We have a branch that we want to start, which is app development. We have an idea implemented that is closed right now, but we really think it's going to be groundbreaking in the way people fly, we hope. We also are going to have a unique apparel line, and then one more branch is another website that has to do with student and CFI interaction.
Cool.
Wow. Can you talk any more about the student CFI interaction piece? Because that hits close to home with what Al and I have been working on very much over the last couple months.
Sure. Sort of the vague concept right now. I don't want to get into the details right now because I don't want to make any promises. But through personal experience, I have had multiple flight instructors just through my private and my instrument. And you really grow to be close to them, and it's really important to research the CFI that you want to be with, because it's sort of a life commitment, sort of like the person you marry or are in a relationship with. So the whole point about this is we're going to bind the two and let students discover CFIs before they, you know, take their first discovery flight. And then through the process, There's going to be accountability, I guess I'll say, for CFIs, because I know there are some, you know, CFIs out there, and there are some great CFIs, and it'd be nice to get them recognized. And that's part of it. And then another part of it is sort of helping CFIs find jobs and, you know, get their name and network, as you will.
Wow.
That's cool.
Al, just listening to Ian, it's kind of like our old bad CFI, good CFI, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll have to get the bad CFI out there. But, no, I think that's something you're hitting on something there, Ian, because a lot of people, I've got a few new students coming down the pipeline, and some of them are starting off fresh. They've never had an instructor before, but there's one guy that's going to be starting with me, and I'm going to be his sixth instructor. And he's not very far along in his flight training, and it just gets, you know, it's all too familiar of a story now, and you know, tackling that issue, I think, is it's very, very important. As you, like you said, it's almost like they're not marrying the person. I would call it, you're going to become their therapist in some respects. You know, you listen to help them with their problems.
Yeah, and I mean, let me preface by saying that my CFIs have been wonderful if they're listening, because I really do contribute a lot of my aviation love towards, you know, everything because of them and how they loved aviation as well. So I'm not bagging on any of my CFIs, but I know from other people's experiences.
Well, and sometimes they're good CFIs, but their heart is maybe flying for a regional or just kind of what we'll call the climbing the ladder. And exactly. So they just go away. So even the good ones sometimes just go away, and you go, wait a minute, I really liked you, and you were helping me. Where are you going?
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, that link between the student, that you said like marriage, and it's kind of like me that you find someone to cut your hair.
Yeah.
And it's like a doctor. You know, all of a sudden you find someone. I've been going to the same person probably for, I don't know, 10, 15 years now, and she should never be sick, because when I need my haircut, I want it to look right. And I don't know how I got on that subject, but anyway, rein me in, Al. Rein me in.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. There's a lot of people that refuse to go to another hairstylist because they're afraid it's going to be wrong, and you know, and a lot of the same respects that goes on. The same principles apply to flight instructors. No, there's a lot of good ones out there. I think some of the people can, instructors aren't necessarily bad, but, you know, there's, I guess the interaction can be improved.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So some people aren't made to be CFIs, you know, and we can't blame them. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Some people are not, they can't, you know, they're not made to be CFIs. Those people are the ones that you find, in my opinion, that are the ones that you may find that go out and use it as a stepping stone to a greater position. And I think a lot of people do that, but you know, the people do it for their own reasons. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think it's not just because they want to be somewhere else. Some people, and I think Ian was kind of alluding to this, they're educators at heart. There's a difference between a great pilot that can teach and a great educator that flies.
Yeah.
And that is how to do it. Because the educators, I mean, so many of these guys and gals just are, they understand how to help someone achieve that next level, whether it's a crosswind landing or the overall certificate, but they're invested in saying, how am I going to get you to achieve your goal? You know, you and I all have talked about this a lot over the last several months.
Right, yeah. Definitely. Cool. Ian, what about your apparel line? What's going to be that? Is it going to be like sunglasses or shirts or the do not remove before flight shirts?
No, I mean, I just want to put a spin on just aviation apparel in general. We're going to use a lot of our branding, but we sort of want to do like throwback and, you know, back or, you know, like unique and I'm trying to look for but just stuff you won't always find. It's stuff that is just unique, I guess. It's very hard to explain, I guess.
Yeah. No.
But it's, now all of a sudden I've got all kinds of things going through my head. I shouldn't position it like that. But anyway, you know, you talk about throwback. It's amazing how many things I have from when I took my life in the 70s, I found Piper hats. I don't think people would be caught dead with those hats, but I don't get that. But I've got jackets. Maybe. Actually, well, I won't even go there. I had a non-aviation shirt that I was going to bring up, but And second thought, I'm going to maintain the classiness of this radio show.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Well, discretion is kind of my middle name.
And it's not... Mm-hmm. We're going to deal with throwback type stuff or like back in the older ages or like cool items. But, you know, it's also putting a spin on the normal items, like maybe the remove before flight will just, you know, it'll be different. It'll be designed different. It'll set us apart from the normal crowd. And obviously that's our goal from day one, is to be different.
And you keep saying our and we. Is there somebody else that should get a little mention here, or is it another just behind-the-scenes person?
I just like to encompass everyone that's helping with the site and everyone that's on the team, because if it wasn't for, you know, my developers and designers and everyone helping out, I wouldn't be able to do this. So it's not just me. It's obviously everyone in the background as well. So
Al and I have talked in the last few months about how there's just so much opportunity in aviation, and here you are, 19, obviously a good mind and could do a lot. What makes you look to aviation to take your entrepreneurial spirit to try something here rather than in something that maybe would be considered more opportunistic or more probable of a success?
You know what? I sort of ask myself that every day, but it's... We all know that aviation is an up and down roller coaster, and it's not necessarily probably the easiest industry to start your, you know, entrepreneurial ambitions. But I can't get over the fact that I'm in love with aviation. You know, it's impossible not to be in aviation and, you know, do what I want in life. And I've always loved the airlines, and I've always loved general aviation ever since, you know, I started flying. So I just can't envision myself being an entrepreneur in any other industry. I've always had the vision of being in aviation. So there's like no other choice.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
We believe all that. I mean, we're very much in, as I like to say, we're in violent agreement with you.
Yeah.
It's not an addiction. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah,
no, it's
exactly.
An addiction.
It's in our DNA. It's really in the DNA. I tell you what, when I was in college, I had a junk mail business. So my dad and I, let me back up a few years. My dad had a direct mail facility where we sent out flyers and brochures in the mail for companies and things like that. And when I was in college, we set one up down in Champaign at the University of Illinois, where I went. And, you know, I was in charge of running that, and, you know, I was getting all gung-ho about it, and I'm like, hey, we're actually got this little business in college, and it's going, and it's neat, and all of a sudden, boom, I just got pulled right back into aviation. You know, it's just like something in my DNA was activated, and, you know, I feel bad because I kind of abandoned this thing. And, you know, then a couple years later, I was trying my hand in real estate, and boom, you know, I get pulled right back into aviation. So, you know, that's cool that you figured that out, you know, from the get-go. And then, hey, you know, this, I think there's a lot of neat opportunities in aviation just by the fact of, I liken it to the real estate market, you know, that it's like almost, you know, it's depressed, and aviation is kind of depressed in its own way. And, you know, you're in a depressed market like that, a lot of neat things come out of it.
Well, I think a lot of people leave it too, and I think you're probably saying that not many people would think that, okay, I'm going to invest all my skills and whatever money and all into an aviation business. They're looking at other technology issue areas or things with social media and all, and maybe you're going to incorporate that in. But I just think when everyone gets out, there's an opportunity, because I see the economy come back. I'm seeing people buying airplanes. I'm seeing a lot of positives, and kudos to those that had the foresight to say, I'm going to follow my passion and make something happen here on the rebound.
And I think that's a great thing with my age right now, is I have almost nothing to lose to start and get in early when we are in a down market, because, I mean, it's just like a stock market. You could almost consider it too. If there's down, more people are wanting to get involved because they can reap the benefits in the long run. But it's more about the love of aviation than, you know, benefiting financially, but I mean, that's always a nice goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And if you do well, it will be financial, regardless of where you are, whatever industry.
Yes.
You know, it's at least that's what I was always taught, and I choose to believe that.
Definitely. Definitely. So, Ian, you're 19 right now. You're a freshman.
Yes.
So what are you an aviation major at in the aviation program?
That was a deep reflection for my whole high school life, was choosing whether I was going to do flight or a business major. And I finally made the decision, controversial to many pilots, but I am a finance and entrepreneurship major.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm going to get all my ratings, hopefully out of college or in the summers between school.
Yeah, awesome. Well.
Does your school offer an aviation program?
They do, and I'm actually on the Flying Bobcats, the flight team. I just don't want to get lessons down here, I guess I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you.
That's fine.
It's pricey down here.
But you know what's funny? I mentioned I wanted to be either an air traffic controller or an airline captain or an airline pilot, and I was going to go to Purdue because my brother went to Purdue, one of my brothers went to Purdue, my mom went to Purdue, and then I did have another brother that went to Illinois, and I was aware of the Institute of Aviation, which was a two-year program back there. Back then, and what's funny is I went to visit a friend at the University of Iowa in Iowa City, and I got there and I absolutely fell in love with the campus. It is the coolest campus of the ones I've seen, and to this day it's just a great town. I love being a Hawkeye, so I decided to go there and found out afterward they didn't even have an aviation program.
Wow.
So yeah, I went in as a math major, which was first of many majors, but I ended up getting a license and working at the local airport there.
Sounds like a riot.
It was, but you know, I again, young and let's just say impulsive, here I was, I like this place, I'm just going to go here, and then all of a sudden, what do you mean you don't have aviation? Right. What am I doing here?
Nice. It's definitely nice to go to the airport every weekend and wash airplanes with the flight team, but I'm a Part 61 guy at heart, so it's it'd be hard going to 141.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, I got a question for you. So, are there any other aviation? You know, well, first of all, do you share what you're doing with your fellow classmates?
What do you mean by that?
Like, do they know that hey, you're working on these these businesses on the side, and you know, you're making a go at it? During while you're taking entrepreneurship classes and stuff like that?
I'm not too vocal about it. I'm not going to come out and say, you know, hey, I'm doing this. But if we get in a conversation, yeah, I mean, I'll bring it up if the time is right. But I'm not overly vocal about it to all my friends and whatnot. But
yeah.
Faculty, I think, know. My entrepreneurship, the head of entrepreneurship, I think, knows as well. He also knows that I want to begin an airline out of college, so...
Yeah.
So that's in the works later on, but...
Nice.
But I don't know if I answered that question correctly, but...
Yeah, no, that was good. I think that... So a few people probably know what you're doing and all
that.
A
lot of my aviation friends know, obviously, but...
Yeah, right. What do they think about that? Do they think that it's pretty cool? Are they doing other businesses, not necessarily in aviation, but are they working on things themselves?
I'm trying to think if I know anyone that...
Yeah, so it's...
Not really any of my age.
Yeah. So I think...
Yeah, no.
The cool thing is that, like, you know, you're 19 and you're doing this and getting out there and actually making some things happen, which, I mean, hats off to you, because that's actually pretty cool, and that's a pretty big hurdle, and... You know, having a full coursework of academics on your plate as well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so congrats.
Thank you.
But are there any other people at your school that are in entrepreneurship or anything like that that are looking to aviation, you know, to make a living or spend, you know, most of their entrepreneurial passion?
Entrepreneurship at Ohio University, this is the first year for the degree.
Oh, nice.
Since I'm a freshman, I'm still taking core classes, and next semester I'll dive into some entrepreneurship management classes where I'll get to meet more entrepreneurship majors, but it's a very popular major here now. I haven't been able to meet anyone and see if anyone's in aviation, but I am open to speaking with people and seeing if they want to join up if I think their temperament is the same as mine.
Yeah.
Which is what? What, when you say that, what does that mean, temperament is the same as yours? What aspects are you talking?
I'm talking about leadership and I guess management, your time, and, you know, devotion, and, you know, it's just, you got to have a passion for the business you want to start, or you're not going to want to do it every day. And I've ran into that over the last couple of years with other things I've done and other people I've worked with, is if they're not passionate about what you're passionate about, it's hard to cohesively do something together.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going for the money, you're not going to find the money. 99 times out of 100, certainly it can happen, but that passion, that, you know, what was it that someone said? If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing. I think, you know, I'm sure Ian, you feel that way. You know, that this isn't perceived as like work or something. You're dreading doing it. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely a commitment, but I mean, I love doing it, and I can't wait to, you know, get it out there for everyone to see and get constructive criticism.
Yeah, so. Right.
Now, is this, and I apologize if you answered and I just didn't hear it, is this part of what you're doing at Ohio University, or is this kind of on the side? Because you mentioned the teachers know what you're doing, and how are you able to focus on the rest of your core coursework when you got to get so much done on the Heading 370 side?
Right. So I've been asked that before, and I'm not getting credit for any type of the site or, you know, whatever, the business. It is difficult to manage flight team, coursework, and this business all together, but I'm managing it. Sleep, I might need to sleep in a couple weekends, but other than that, it's... I'm managing, I guess.
Yeah.
To be young again. Woo!
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I think I remember the same thing. There was... one person came up to me. I was doing, you know, I was the captain of Ardenifa flying team. I was an independent CFI. I worked for the university as a flight instructor, and then you know, was a full time student. And you know, somebody asked me, like, do you think you're doing too many things? And I, at the end of the day, I looked at him. I'm like, no, I don't think I'm doing enough. You know, it's just kind of a the drive, there's something to say about that, and you know, you figure out a way to make it happen. You know, you may pull an all nighter, but hey, you only live once.
Yeah, exactly. You can sleep when you're dead.
Yeah. Cool, man. So, how about has there been anything that you found surprising or different than, you know, from heading, or when you first developed the concept of heading 370? To where it is today?
Yeah, I mean, the original concept was to be, in all honesty, it was to go after that CFI website first. But strategic management, we're focusing on this first. That would probably be the biggest change. And we never anticipated having an apparel line and app development, but we've decided over time that we want to make this into more of a brand and a company than just a single website. We want to have tangible goods for people to be able to, you know, hand out. And, you know, we want our name out there, not just on a website. www.whatever. We're not just that. We are a company.
Right. Awesome. So the apparel and all that, that's just more, you know, to give some people something tangible to make, you know, realize, to enjoy, but also to make sure that, you know, they know that you're out there.
Yeah, a face to a name, I guess.
Absolutely.
Now going back to the main purpose that you're going to launch with, which is the acquisition or selling of aircraft, is that mainly going to be used aircraft, or is there going to be an aspect dealing with factory new as well?
Currently, we have no anticipation of dealing with factories and doing that. Like I say, I'm open-minded to a lot of ideas, and that will be down the road. But really, it's just about users interacting and posting their classifieds for their used aircraft. Even if maybe a company has a new aircraft and they want to post it, they're more than welcome to do that.
Sure. And is this also inclusive of people that want to get involved in partnerships and they're looking for a partner? And like the AOPA Partner Network is doing that now. Would you be doing the same type of thing?
Yeah, you will be able to post more than just aircraft. There will be a spot, or there will be, you know, places for you to enter your products if you have aviation products that you want to sell, and partnerships. It's going to be really open to anything in aviation. So,
and will it be international, just U.S.? Will it be regional? How are you going to roll it out? Is it going to be a phased approach, that kind of thing?
It's going to roll out because we think it's easiest to start with the U.S., but we obviously plan to expand quickly into all the other countries.
And it'll be all the U.S. all at one time, or would you just like focus on the Midwest first or Ohio?
That's the beauty about a website, is it's fairly mobile, or I guess it's all mobile. So we're gonna open it up for anyone to use. So they're gonna have at it.
There you go. Yeah, I guess, see, when I talk and ask the questions, you can tell what generation I come from.
Door-to-door salesman?
That's right. Well, hey, I told you before, my dad sold brassieres, so I had a whole different view of the world.
Right? Wow. Probably a good view.
Yeah, right. Well, he always liked to keep his hand in the business. So.
Wow.
That's his joke, not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sounds like some airline captains.
Yeah, oh, that reminds me of a joke, but we'll save that for next week.
Absolutely. So so we've got Ian Hoyt, the CEO of Heading 370, with us tonight, and have a great conversation about what he's got coming on, and getting back to Ian here, what's probably one of the most favorite aspects about Heading 370? If you were to pick out one part of your company that you're really proud of or you really, really enjoy, what is it?
Man, that's a tough question. It's hard to pick one thing. I definitely say the user interactivity and the ability to be social and just share aviation is going to be what's great about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, we go back to these themes about socialness, I guess, in aviation. There's a big, community push about this, AOPA with their flying clubs and all that. There's a couple, like, KingAirNation.com.
Great guys.
Yeah, absolutely. They're doing something really neat. And they're just trying to build these communities for micro niche communities. And I guess you're tackling the one with buying and selling aircraft, which is really cool. You know, I think ultimately that's gonna, people are gonna really latch on to that pretty quickly, because hey, half of aviation is, the people that make it, that's most of it, and interacting with fellow pilots, who doesn't like that?
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun ride, and when we get to implement the other website idea and the app idea, it's going to open even a bigger market and hopefully get more people into aviation as well. So,
well, and that's the key, and that's the thing that Al and I are so focused on, and others like us, in terms of growing the pie, not just our slice of it.
Right.
And and people like you really making that happen.
Yeah.
So definitely. I want to go back to, you talked about flying. I think you said you had your first lesson when you were 15. What kind of airplane was that?
It was a Cessna 172.
Why, you and everybody else in the world.
It was a G1000, sadly. But
wow.
Sadly, that's awesome.
Well, I got about half my instrument in a Warrior, an old Warrior, and I love analog. I mean, it teaches you so much when you fly steam gauges or analog gauges.
Yeah. No, they do. I got to say that they are an oldie but a goodie, but, you know, I think they're...
I mean, going back to the glass cockpit now would be perfectly fine with me, but on a... When you're learning private and, you know, look outside the window, it's hard to when you have this big screen looking at you.
Yeah.
So.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah, I learned, of course, on steam gauges. And
you did?
Then started. I did? You're surprised by that?
I'm just carbon dating you, that's all. I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you very little. and then I got involved with the TAAs of the early 2000s, which, like, the Pipers came with the Garmin stack with GPS 430s and all that.
Right. Wow.
And so those were cool, and then I got involved with Avedon Glass and G1000s, and I just love it. You know, I can fly a steam gauge and work a good HSI, but I just feel safer with the glass, I guess, just because it's worked so well for me over the last 5, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it's been.
Yeah,
it's definitely great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's just in the private VFR type situation when you're learning. Personal opinion, I think I would rather had the analog, but hey, I passed my check ride, so I guess I did something right.
Yeah, and that was in a 172 or in the Warrior?
I passed my private check ride in the 172.
Right. And then you said you do have your instrument rating as well?
No, I have about a half of it done, and I did that in a Warrior and a Redbird sim.
Cool. How do you like doing it in a Redbird?
I have mixed emotions about the Redbird sim. I like the motion part, but since I worked for the flight school, and sometimes I would do here and there tasks, one of them was fixing the Redbird whenever it was broken. It was a lot.
That's interesting. Actually, you know, you talk about that, and Al and I have been recently talking, as well as the rest of our flying club called Leading Edge Flying Club, of getting a desktop Redbird, not the motion, but getting the desktop, just because then people can use it to log some hours and all. And there's a lot of controversy, even though I'd say the general tone in the industry is it's a great way to cut costs and, you know, should be used, but I want to make sure I understand what the people that are going to be using feel at large and if there's real benefit.
Well, I really like the concept, but again, you got to think if you're going to go to cut costs, sometimes there is a negative to that, and there was a lot of downtime for that Redbird. Maybe that's just ours, but. Overall, I would have liked to see the Redbird active more, and then I probably would have been more happy about my experience. But don't take just my word. I get a large array of input.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, actually, you know what? If there's a there's a good article in this week's January's Flight Training Magazine that the AOPA puts out, and they talked about the Skyport. Which was the Redbird's, flight school and all that, and it's actually a great article that talks about using simulators and general aviation and getting your license, and it was really neat. We mentioned the word lifestyle, they almost turned it into kind of a little lifestyle, which was I found pretty fascinating. It's a great article. You should check it out.
I will look for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you're 19 years old, you know, a freshman at university and starting this company. I don't know the family situation at home, but is those that are closest around you support you in this? And what do they think about flying in general? Is it safe to them, or they wish you wouldn't do it? What's that like?
Well, my mom has been a huge proponent of me going after whatever I want to do. And, I mean, she's a dance instructor, so she went after what she loved, and so I wanted to go after what I loved. And, I mean, through my high school and middle school years, you know, I did a lot of lessons here and there on instruments, and other activities, and then I just grew in love with aviation, and she's behind me 100%, and it's so nice for my family members to support my addiction now.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, but I still have some family members that worry about, okay, you're going to go flying, and that's a dangerous thing in their mind.
Well,
do you get that?
My mom used to get nervous a lot, and I mean, she's my mom, so she probably should get nervous, but I think she's grown more, you know, less nervous to the fact that I'm going flying, because she knows I've been trained and I know what I'm doing and all this fun stuff. And it helps that my girlfriend's dad is also a pilot, so now I have another sort of aviation as well. So
that's nice. Really cool. Does he have a nice airplane you get to fly now?
I know. He's a 37 that has a Southwest logo on it.
Nice.
Well, there you go. That's pretty nice.
So, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's cool. So, have you taken your girlfriend up flying a bunch?
Not yet. Soon. Very soon.
How long have you been flying? How long since you've had your pilot's license, I should put it?
Let's see, I got it December when I turned 17, so 2 years, I guess.
Okay. Then why haven't you taken her up? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. We're getting to it. We just haven't found the time.
Oh, so. My goodness. Yeah, you may not have heard in a previous show. I've been married, and I've known my wife for a long time, and she used to fly with me in the 70s. And now it's harder to get her to fly with me unless we're going to see family. It's just funny how as you get older, your fears start to intensify, I think, and especially in the unknown.
Yeah,
and I've learned a lot over the last many years as to, you know, when's an appropriate time to take people that are a little uncomfortable and when it's not.
Yeah, she loves aviation and she loves flying on the airlines, so hopefully I can convert that into general aircraft, because it is a different experience, but I'm not going away from gay, so she might have to start liking it a bit if she doesn't.
Hey, Al, I think we need to take the pinch hitter course on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be fun.
Al does a great job, pinch hitter course, and I think we got so much interest in people that were partners of the pilots left his little class wanting to, hey, let's go fly. Let me try what I just learned, so... Yeah. I think we should take it on the road and start with your girlfriend.
Yeah, I think she's only been in a single engine aircraft maybe once with her dad, so she has a lot of exposure left to do.
Yeah, there you go. So have you, in terms of heading 370, thought about after these first four initiatives? I mean, is there a long-term plan, or hey, let's just get these first four out, starting with, of course, the classifieds? Or do you have a 10-year vision of what this thing could look like?
Our 10-year, or actually coming down on about 5-year vision here, is to have all these branches established. And then after the 5 years, we're going to really grow and, you know, add a whole market of apps for aviators. And then, you know, just grow from there and really focus on our core values and making a quality product for you guys. Because four attributes of a company could be a lot to some people. So we just want to focus on them and make them, strengthen them, and really produce a good company for you guys.
Yeah. Well, for you say you guys, for you as well, right? I suspect even you'll be a user of your services.
I hope I am able to be a user.
Yeah. As we always say in our companies, you have to eat your own dog food.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's the view that we want. Dog food.
Well, come on, Al. That's the way the companies say it, right? It's not a negative. I know it sounds like a bad thing, but think of it conceptually. You gotta eat your own dog food, and people.
Right.
We just hope this is the next best thing in the classifieds and tech aviation world, and we hope to make it quality.
Absolutely.
There you go. So I want to ask you about this RV8 that you're building. Is
sure.
that okay, Al? I hear Al wanting to talk. We're not together, so is that okay direction
yeah,
to go?
Yeah, go for it.
Al?
Yes, go ahead.
So you mentioned your mentor is an RV. Is that you look at the different RVs? Why the RV8? Did you consider other ones? What you know, kind of what were the drivers behind the scenes on this?
Yeah, the drivers were one, Dave, my mentor slash inspiration slash whatever. He finished his RV8, so that was the original seed in the back of my mind. And then I started thinking at like Oshkosh 2010. On the way home, I'm like, I could do this. And so I started researching all the RVs, and I realized that the RV8 is arguably the sexiest RV on the market.
Okay.
And I wanted tandem seating, tail wheel, fighter-like, and that is the RV8. So that's how I came up with the decision. I really like the design, and I do not regret my decision whatsoever.
Did you look at any others, though?
Yeah, obviously it was between the RV8. Obviously, is sort of the sister to the RV8 in a way, but it's side by side. So if you want to see the person you're flying with, I guess. And then the RV4, which is a smaller version, the original version of sort of the RV8. So those were my decisions. The RV4 is a great airplane, and that was sort of between that and the RV8. But ultimately, I wanted to think long term, and in the long term, I want a bigger cabin because I am tall, so I want to be able to fit into my airplane.
What a concept!
Yeah, what a concept!
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's
and it's, so. Where are you building it? Is it in the Athens area or?
It's in my garage back. FDY is my home airport. It's not in the airport, but it's in my garage over in Findlay, northwest Ohio.
Oh, I've been there. Actually, it's a nice little gas stop coming home from Cleveland.
Yeah, it's a desert besides corporate America, but I try to life do it whenever I can.
There you go. There you go.
Very cool.
Al, I want to build my own jet or my own plane. We talked about the BD-5. But I'd like to do that. You know what? I think I'd like to build an Evolution.
Those would be cool.
Isn't that the turbine one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw one. Those are really, really cool, except when they're like laying on beaches and hurting people, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, there's I was actually looking at those in anticipation. I know Ian and I had talked about he's building an RV. Before and I, you know, in our conversation about the microjet, and you know, so I started looking up kit planes and all that because you know I'm like, why not? What the heck? And you're kind of an inspiration where I was just like, let's just throw in the towel and just go for it. What do we have to lose? It's like nothing. You know, that's really the answer. You know, so I looked at the Evolution and man, those things are cool, but you know they're pretty expensive. You know, so Mark, if you're more than willing to fund it, let's go for it.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, we talk about bucket lists all the time, and I absolutely want to fly a turbine. And I know you get to do it every day, or pretty much every day, Al, but for those of us that, you know, Ian and I, we love our piston airplanes, but boy,
yeah.
It would be nice to throw some fuel on a fire and hear that whine just like our start to the show. Wow.
I tell you what, though, tonight I was glad, you know, we were at, I mentioned on our flight out to the Philadelphia area, now New Jersey, but I told Travis, my coworker, while we were sitting there at 17,000 feet, we were in pretty moderate icing, and, you know, I said, man, I'm glad to be in the King Air and with the, you know, these PT-6 engines because they're very reliable. You know, they can take a beating like that and produce a lot of power to, you know, help you get out of a sticky situation like that. It was
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Well, then fine. And then let's build us a King Air.
Yeah. All right. Deal.
Put an experimental tag on it.
That's right. That's right.
Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We'll have to buy a used 90 off of Heading 370.
Please.
Absolutely.
If he's got it, we will do that. As soon as I earn my, what is it, I'm working on my second million in aviation because I gave up on the first.
Oh, man.
Ba-dunch.
Something. Yeah, ba-dum boom. Sorry, that's an old one. I thought I'd get a little more giggle out of you.
A little bit more whatever. Pizzazz.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's cool. That's I just got a text from a guest, one of our live studio audience members from last week. He is actually building a RV-8 and himself, and he's just saying he's glad to hear that you're building an RV-8, Ian. He's going to be part
of. Well, thank you.
Well, Ian, I want to stay in touch with you because when you build that, after you take the first flight, I'd like to be around for maybe the second.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Good.
I will be flying the first flight.
Yeah. No, I encourage you to do that because I'm not.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, hopefully when you get that built, you'll come and visit us on the live in the show when we're out actually at Signature at the Pewaukee Airport. That'd be a lot of fun.
Definitely.
Cool.
Well, Ian, I'm glad you could join us tonight. We're excited for what you're doing. And again, we look at amazing people doing amazing things. We just love the fact that you're, at your age, have decided to take your skills and focus on making aviation better. I have a lot of confidence that you're going to be doing some great things, and we will keep in touch.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Letting me be on the show. It's great having some support. So
absolutely.
Please keep in touch.
Yeah,
we'll do it. And as you get updates, let's keep our audience involved. We certainly want to see this come to fruition just as much as you do.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, please do.
Great.
Thanks, Ian, and keep up
the
good work. And good luck with the rest of your flying coursework and all that. We're looking forward to what you have to come.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, Ian. See you later.
See ya.
See ya.
Awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
Like I say, after I hear people like that, or you always have such great ideas, I always feel inadequate somehow. How come I didn't do it again? As I said earlier, I kind of remember I'm of my generation, maybe didn't do that as much. But I just get so excited by young people, yourself included, that have so much energy for this thing that we all love called aviation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that it's cool. You know, one thing that the show has really taught me is that there's a lot of cool people out there doing really cool things, and they're tackling, you know, almost all aspects of aviation. You know, Ian's tackling buying and selling airplanes. Then there's, Keith Smith doing Pilot Edge, providing virtual air traffic control services for simulators and things like that. And, you know, everybody's kind of doing what they're really good at, which ultimately, you know, I'm absolutely sold on the fact that, hey, when people do stuff like that, you know, they're taking their outside talents and putting it back into aviation. It's just going to be absolutely one of the coolest things.
Yeah, I totally agree. Hey, I wanted to talk to you as we transition now into Hangar Talk, right? It's 9:30 Central Time.
Yeah.
So we kind of alluded to some earlier, and I had a problem today, and I'm going to come to you. I don't know if you remember with, you know what Charlie Brown is, right? You're not that young.
Yeah.
Right? And Charlie Brown, they had, Lucy, she put the psychiatrist sign up for 5 cents, and you could talk about your problem. So I'm going to ask you to put your 5 cent thing up and be my CFI psychiatrist where I can come and talk about things.
All right. So with inflation, that's, what's that, $20?
Or at least a meatball sandwich at Players next Sunday at 5 o'clock.
But no, the sign is up.
All right. Well, so and I don't know if you can hear me. Or actually, I'm hearing you break up a little bit. Hopefully, we don't have a bandwidth issue on either my internet or yours. So I had a problem today, and thank God I have club members that helped me see it, and a son that helped me see it, and a wife that helped me see it, and I had a little bit, but I had a case of get-there-itis today.
Ooh.
I woke up, yeah, and I don't normally do that. You know, I usually say, okay, it looks crappy, I'm not going. So here's the situation. Last week, I got invited by my oldest son to come see him and my daughter-in-law and my granddaughter in Cedar Rapids, and it's just about 165 nautical miles away from here. And so that's a quick little hour trip in a Cirrus, and so I've been looking forward to it. And then last night, I started hearing about the crappy weather we were going to have today, and I looked at it, I said, oh, we should be all right.
Yeah.
And then, but maybe not, but okay. So then I got up early, and we wanted to be wheels up about 7 o'clock, and all I could see was a lot of precip, low ceilings, and, you know, low temperatures in the 30s, low 30s, you know, freezing temperature.
Right.
And I don't know what it is, but I've just been egged on by so many people over the years and found, hey, you know what, you can make most of your trips.
Right.
And I found myself rationalizing, I really want to see my family, and I can do this. I'll have some TKS, I'm not feeky, I can't no flight into known icing. And then it just didn't feel right. I had the little voice, and then my son kept saying, don't make an emotional decision, make a logical decision. He doesn't even know aviation. And eventually I called you, I talked to another pilot, and basically we all said, it just doesn't make sense. There's too many unknowns, and there's this significant chance over my destination of the super cooled liquid droplets, the SLD icing and all that.
Yeah.
So I was proud that I didn't go, but also at the same time I was like, oh my God, I was really ready to hop in that airplane. And it was all because of get their itis, which is something I don't think I've ever exhibited before.
Right. You know, that's kind of interesting. That, you know, that's
it's happened a lot.
Well, get their itis, at the airlines they always called it, you know, it happened quite a bit. It was go home day. But yeah, no, I think that's a good realization that says, hey, you know what, we're all prone to this, and you know, you really want to see your granddaughter and your extended family, and not to mention go flying. But you know, that's it does happen to everybody.
Yeah, it was scary. So I, you know, it wasn't scary, but to me, in retrospect, I probably would have been fine. But the ability to make the go no go decision, it's interesting how even when you think you've kind of got it nailed after all these years, you got to worry about some of that complacency that creeps up, because I think that's what happened to me, is everything's always going to work out.
Right.
It's going to be fine. Just full steam ahead. And ultimately, the thing that bothered me the most is because the ceilings were going to be so low, near minimums, I wanted it now underneath the clouds, not up at 15,000 feet or wherever the tops were. I think they were between, depending on the area, 12 to 18,000. And I wanted something. So I said, you know what, there is no out below, because I'll be 200 feet out above the ground when I break out.
Right.
But even if it had been a little bit higher, it would have been interesting to, or it was interesting that I was, again, getting this complacency saying, oh, it'll be all right.
Right. No, that's good that you're able to recognize that. And I know that you and I spent some decent amount of time on the phone yesterday talking about this. And, you know, I would say that, hey, you know, that's good that you were able to reach out and, you know, reach out to people and kind of get their opinion. And, you know, I'm always one that says, hey, fly the license that you have and don't be afraid of 200 feet overcast and a half a mile visibility. Because
I'm never afraid of 200 mile overcast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But anyway, there was a but you know, it was kind of it was a really neat you know, discussion that we had. I think that you know, that I learned a lot. You know, I was trying to figure out what I would do, and you know, I think ultimately you made the right decision at the end. Just because it said, hey, you know, you looked at where your outs were, you know, you felt like you're competent and all that, but, and I, there's no doubt that you are, but, you know, you look at what kind of airplane you were doing it in. You're doing it in a non-certified for ICE aircraft, you know, and that's kind of the weakest link.
Right, well, other than the pilot, right?
Well, no, I think that, you know, even... You would have been able to handle the flight and all that as a pilot, and you would have made good decisions and things. But you know, with the get their itis, you know, maybe the thing to really look at was you knew that there was ice, there was going to be ice all over the place, and, well, not necessarily ice all over the place, but, you know, in my opinion, ice is a fairly isolated event, but, you know, that the conditions were really prime, you know, for ice to occur all along your route, and, you know, the airplane that you were going to do it in, if it was a Fiki instead of a TKS system, you know, you probably would have been fine.
But yeah. Well, and again, it's even this afternoon, I was looking to go fly and practice some approaches and ultimately decided not to. But as one of our other club members said to me, well, the ice is all so high, right? Even though the result is greater than 50% probability at 3 and 5,000 feet, all the pilot reports seem to be at 11,000 and 13,000. So, you know, probably could have and should have gone up this afternoon, but, you know, I guess the saying is it's better to be on the ground wishing you were in the air than vice versa.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, there was really, you know, you made a great decision, you know, and whether or not it is great because you're here on the radio tonight talking about making the decision.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it can never be the wrong decision, but the other decision may have been okay. But you know what? You just accept it. Hey, I made a decision in the spirit of safety, and like you say, live to tell another story next week.
Yeah, but you know, in retrospect, every day, you know, there's no 365 flying days out of the year, you know, in a particular area. You know, just today wasn't one of them. You know, it's just
Phoenix.
all the listeners out in Phoenix listening, they're probably like throwing bottles and stuff at their radios right now. Yeah, yeah. What are you talking about? Yeah, right.
No, you can't do that. It's 150 degrees, sunny, but 150 degrees.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You made a good call. Your decision making was good, and you know, it's good that you realize that. Hey, the I'm safe checklist applies to all of us, and you know, it easily creeps up on you without even knowing it. You know, the go home itis or the get there itis. You know, that's a pretty big factor that, you know, it's very difficult to recognize.
Well, and I think this, we always talk about the value of the community and all that. So, you know, I appreciate you giving me credit, but there was conversation with you. There was conversation with another pilot, just to kind of bounce ideas off of. And in the old days, I would have called a briefer, but I trust people like you and others that are part of my, to use a word that one of our other board members says, that inner circle, that you know this stuff. And it's so nice to be able to talk to someone else. And I encourage any of our listeners, when you going into a decision, you think, boy, I really want to make this decision on my own. It's okay to, and actually I encourage you to talk to other pilots when you're not that sure. And yet we all learn from that, even the people you're talking to.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think that's the best part about aviation. You know, there is that community that exists. Everybody's willing to help each other out. And, you know, we all have so much to learn from everybody else. And that's
exactly
that's
much fun.
And we have a lot to learn from flight service, but sometimes it's more fun learning it from others. So
exactly,
yeah, definitely.
Well, and shifting subjects a little bit, but somewhat pertinent to the weather, is yesterday we had a big flyout to
Iola.
The name of the city.
Iola, Wisconsin.
Iola.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
Central
they had
County.
Some kind of event there, right?
Yeah, so every Friday, and you're probably thinking, whoa, yesterday was Saturday, but we'll get to that point. But every Friday, there is a fly-in lunch that this little club and gentleman hosts, and you fly in there. It's Iola Central County Airport is actually a pretty cool airport. It's a three-runway grass strip field, and, you know, there could be up to about 70 airplanes there on any given Friday, and you just go there, have a great meal, and share a lot of hangar talk and stories and things like that. And then, but yesterday, the guy had his holiday meal where he had, I think, 7 or 8 turkeys, 7 or 8 hams. Everybody was responsible for bringing a side dish. And that was a so we're going to have a big club fly out there. We're going to fly 2 of our club airplanes up there, fill them up, 3 in the Archer, 4 in the Dakota, and fly up there for the holiday meal. But unfortunately, we were in the same situation as you.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget, I was going to fly up with another club member
right.
who owns his own. It would have been a Piper Fest because it was going to be a Piper Comanche, which while I have been up in a twin Comanche, I've never been in a single engine Comanche, and I was really disappointed. But again, we made the right decision that, you know, based on the weather yesterday and the pilots flying it, it wasn't appropriate to go. So we'll
yeah.
just have to catch them another time.
Yeah, well, the neat thing was is that we were all sitting there, and Palwaukee was VFR when, you know, and we were going to be departing out of Palwaukee, and you know, the METAR read broken at 1,300 feet, few at 700 feet, visibility like 5. You know, so you know, were we legal to leave? Yeah, but you know. You know, then we have obstacles that we have to worry about, maintaining VFR cloud clearances and things like that. And, you know, we just didn't want, we had no margin in any of our, in the flight all the way up there. We were even trying to plot a course to maintain, to stay in Class G airspace all the way up there so we could be 1 mile clear clouds. And, you know, even that didn't work. So when there's no margin, when you're operating in Class G airspace, almost 1 mile clear clouds on a 180-mile flight, that's probably not the day to go up there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and this is something, too, just like we talked with Ian about that maybe today's youth is a little bit more entrepreneurial than when I was growing up. But one of the things that I remember all the time when I was young, those that I hung out with, CFIs, like scud running was, I don't even if I would say not only the norm, but almost expected.
Yeah.
And today, as I'm older, I don't like that as much, and I've heard more and more people. In fact, I may have read an article just recently in one of the major trade rags about, you know what, don't scud run. It isn't that good a thing to do, even though it's legal.
Yeah, well, scud running is, you know, it might, I don't know, I've got mixed emotions on it. If you can maintain VFR and you're comfortable with it, you know, you should definitely go. But, you know, we're leaving out of Chicago, the Chicago area where Class E, you know, unless you're under the Bravo airspace and everything, Class E airspace extends to 700 feet AGL, so it drops down from 1,200 down to 700 feet AGL, and you know, we're saying, okay, well, we can maintain, you know, we could stay in Class G airspace, but you know, think about that, Class G airspace, it's, you know, 600 feet above the ground in a densely populated area, that's illegal in itself, and because you have to maintain 1,000 feet obstacle clearance, you know, so it just, there was really no margin there, and all that, so that's ultimately why we canceled the flight. But going back to your point about scud running, you know, it could be okay, you know, if you know what you're doing and you're very familiar with the territory. You know, I've scud run, and you know, you know thinking that, hey, you know, where are your outs, and are you absolutely, you know, capable and qualified of flying that? So, meaning, do you have an instrument rating to fall back upon? You know, if it gets too low, you know, these are all the things that you should ask yourself, you know?
Yeah, good point. So what do you have planned for this upcoming week flying?
What's that?
What do you have this upcoming week from a flying plans perspective?
Well, that's a good question. We have a, We know that we have at least one ferry flight from Trenton to Doylestown. We've got to move the airplane. That's going to be at least a solid 5-minute flight in the logbook. Yeah! But,
yeah.
Yeah. But we're going to have to return back to Chicago at some point, and you know, our schedule's kind of up in the air from there. But I do have one student that I've been working with, and we decided that next week is going to be his big week for his instrument check ride, and so that's going to be pretty fun. But you know, there's going to be some ground lessons that we're going to kind of do over the phone or over Skype, and you know, talk about some things and how to prepare for his oral. He's done a lot of preparing and demonstrated it, and actually flies halfway decent. And he's going to hash it out. Get a Christmas present for himself.
Yeah, I'm excited. And all his friends and family, it'll be a present for them as well. So, actually, you said something about your 5-minute flight. What is the shortest flight you've ever taken? Besides maybe a touch and go or something at your local airport.
Oh man. Well, there's always the flight to Pilot Pete's from Palwaukee. That's to the Schaumburg Airport. You know, that's a 5-minute flight.
To which one? You're kind of breaking up on me here.
So. So from Palwaukee to Schaumburg Airport, there's that flight.
What about in the King Air? What's the shortest?
Oh my!
In the King Air.
Well, this would probably have to be it. The 5-minute ferry flight. Actually, the first time I ever flew the King Air was with my coworker. We took off out of Doylestown. We just picked up the airplanes from South Carolina, and we flew from Doylestown to Trenton. So we did the reverse trip, and we did a few touch and goes, and then flew back. And it was weird because we didn't really have charts or anything, and we just kind of piloted our way over to Trenton, and coming from the airlines, that was like, you know, all this unknown airspace and stuff like that. So that was kind of a fun flight, that very first flight from Doylestown to Trenton to get a few landings in the King Air. It was fun.
Yeah.
What about you?
Forget my little piston life, but it was a few years ago. I was at Milwaukee, and a young man I knew that had done safety seminars that I had been to in the past. He's in a Lear 35, and I'm commenting how, man, I used to work at an airport when I was a young man, and I got to sit in Lears, but I've never flown in a Lear. Actually, I've never flown in a corporate jet. And he said, well, me and my co-pilot, we're going to reposition this back to Midway Airport. Would you like to go? And I said, well, yeah, but how am I going to get home? And the first officer said, I'll drive you back up here. I said, wait a minute. You're going to put me in a Lear 35 at Palwaukee. We're going to fly to Midway. You're going to get in your car and drive me back here? And it was one of those things. You know, you're part of the community, absolutely, to give you this thrill.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that I sat, you know, right there in the what we would call, for lack of a better term, the side seat. I always call it like a jump seat. So my head was in the cockpit, even though I wasn't, my body wasn't. And that was just the coolest thing to see them work together. It was not only the flight, which was fun. It was too short for me, but I commented. I remember I said I had no idea the not only professionalism, but the skill in communicating with each other for this short flight. Everything from on the taxi, getting everything done so that they're ready at the end. And it was like a symphony with just those two people. And that was just so cool. And again, it was like a 5-minute flight, maybe 10 minutes tops, because we went out over the lake to kind of come around.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. That does sound like an awesome flight. We had at the airline we had relatively short flights like that. Nothing that short, but we would fly from Denver down to Colorado Springs, and then Charlotte to Greensboro, North Carolina. And I guess flying miles, those were, I think, to from Charlotte to Greensboro, that was 80 miles. But over to Colorado Springs, I think that was 50 flying miles from Denver. And, you know, that was...
You wouldn't even be able to go across country.
No, yeah, exactly. You know, I think Colorado Springs was literally... You know, just on the cuff of being a legal cross-country flight, seriously. But it was really neat. You know, and there is an element of, you know, in longer flights. I remember used to flying flights to L.A. out of Milwaukee, and yeah, you get into all these stories and stuff like that, and you know, things just kind of go at the pace of the flight. You know, so you have 4 hours to kind of just get everything done, but you know, you end up in a 20-minute flight, and you gotta really hammer everything out, and you know, rely on you know, crew resource management to get everything done to land and everything. Those were some cool and fun, challenging, I guess, crew, machine, and distance problems, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, we call that CMD, crew, machine, and distance, or whatever you said.
All right.
Awesome. Hey, do we have any more comments from our listeners? You know, I know you were calling some out while we were talking to Ian. I don't want to ignore that. And as I see, we've got about 10 minutes left. I don't know if any other questions.
We had a gentleman send a web form in, and he said, well, this isn't just specifically directed at Ian. This is directed at all of us. But he said, first time listening live, love the show. I am currently listening right now on his iPhone, and then he switched over to his desktop. So that was really neat. He said there was a little bit of a technical issue with there's like he heard a high pitch sound. So if any of you ever hear a high pitch sound, that's something that deals with the sound card. So unfortunately, that's there. But anyway, there's that. But yeah. So it's kind of we had some good reach out tonight. We had our last studio audience member mention that, you know, he's glad to hear that Ian's building an RV8 just like him. And somebody tweeted in from Syracuse, New York. Or texted in from Syracuse, New York, asking Ian about, you know, if they're going to give recommendations for the different types of airplanes, you know, and what constitutes a good airplane, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of in the market myself, as you know.
Yeah.
And too bad his site isn't up and running. I've got to use the 1990s technology, I guess, or way of thinking to go about this. But it's like our friend that just bought that VTOL Bonanza. It's a blast. This is one of those items where it's just not the destination, but the journey. It's fun to be able to kind of window shop, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is fun to window shop. I'm encouraging that the gentleman that bought the Bonanza to write a blog article, because he has a great story to tell. And he said that, you know, it becomes an obsession almost. And, you know, and the thing that drives it is that this has been a dream of his for his entire life. So to really capture the moment and have a great experience buying an airplane like that, you know, there's a great story in it. And hopefully, well, we know that Ian will certainly facilitate part of that dream.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for you. You know, as we talk about the acquisition of aircraft, yeah. You know, we have people in the Leading Edge Flying Club, and they're buying these airplanes, a beautiful, probably pristine V-35B. Mike's got a great 1979 Dakota. We've got the 2004 Archer and the 2005 SR-22. Just great airplanes, right?
Yeah.
And then you and I were at an event. We're looking at 2013 or 2012 SR-22s.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure there's a division of people on both sides of it, but how cool would it be to own a new airplane or not? Is it? Would you rather go with the tried and true, you know, old Piper, Bonanza, Cessna? What's your view on that?
That's actually a good question. I've never been asked that before. From a value standpoint, you know, I don't know. You know, there's a, you know, in my position right now, I'd probably just say use, because I can't afford a $500,000, you know, $800,000 airplane. But, you know, I actually thought about that with the student that I was talking with, or that I just mentioned that he's going to take his check ride next week. We talked about it, said, hey, if the airplane is used correctly, you know, it will more than pay for itself really, really quickly over time, and any depreciation and things like that will be mitigated by hopefully the number of dollars your airplane makes you if you use it in a business sense. You know,
right.
if it's a if you're going to use it just to go fly for a $100 hamburger, you know, maybe be, maybe that that you know a little Piper Warrior is a thing for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and the thing I always worry about, or maybe think about, work is a long word, is the, you know, maintenance and the spinner-to-tail warranty and how nice is that, but you're paying for that, obviously, yeah. with an airplane that's just like a car, or a luxury car, going to depreciate a lot the moment you walk off the showroom right. or whatever with this thing. Yeah.
The neat thing is I didn't realize how advanced these Cirruses were. You know, I had a good idea, you know, you think just Garmin 1000, but... Whoa, you know, there's a lot more to these things, and they're incredible machines. It's a very entrepreneurial dream and aspect behind all this stuff, and, you know, it's really, they're phenomenal products, and you're right, you do pay for them, but rightfully so, when you sit in it, it's like, wow, you know, I understand why this thing is this much money.
Yeah, yeah, well, again, there's trade-offs and all of that.
Yeah.
I got someone just texted me saying, actually, I think they texted you too. I got some answers for you on that one.
Yeah.
I wonder, do we have time? I'm just asking him, he wants to call in.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what he says.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, you know, there's some, let's see here. There's a, you know, he has what's really neat is that everybody has their own view on all this, and you know there's some great value. I call them value airplanes. Like I would always say that the Dakota and the, you know, like a Piper Lance is a good value airplane, meaning that you kind of get a lot of bang for your buck. They're really good deals and things like that. But you know there's also brand new airplanes. These are going to be the new value airplanes out there, and hey, it's going to be pretty awesome. Speaking
yeah.
of that, there was a. Did you know? Next week we have a. We have a group of guys that are working on the Aviation Access Project. They're going to be on the show. And are you familiar with them?
Say more for me. I probably am, but not with just that amount of information.
Well, the Aviation Access Project. So these guys are trying to help out with. With the cost of aviation and sharing aviation with a lot of people, but they're out trying to create, utilize all the utility and on light sport aircraft. You know, I think you can.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right. There could be. I guess you could have an argument that says, "Hey, light sport aircraft are really cool, but hey, have they really caught on? Probably not." And they're trying to make it easier for people to own them and operate them and really really tap into the value on what they were created for.
You know, we've talked about it before, and I hate to repeat myself, but how cool is that these people that we're meeting that I think are absolutely going to turn this industry around, and they take the nuggets that are there and mold it into something that has value for so many of us, whether it's Ian today or all the people we talked about before, and now I'm excited to hear about what's going to happen next weekend.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really, really cool. I think that's a need we have.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge need, and the neat thing is that everybody is doing their own thing and taking their outside talents, bringing them into aviation and making aviation better and more accessible for everyone, which, you know, yeah. that's pretty awesome.
So if I want to do that, all I have to do is develop some talent.
Develop some talent, absolutely.
Yeah, I got to come up with something.
Well, if
you thought I was serious there for a second.
Well, I did because, you know, unfortunately, I'm not good at picking up on when we're face to face. I got a good idea if you're joking or not, but
yeah, I'm smiling. Maybe you and I should do the video thing here so you can. I can kind of flip the bird at you or something like that. But anyway,
exactly.
That's here and there. Now, next week, are you going to be live?
We're going to be live.
Are you going to be in PWK?
We're going to be at PWK. So that's an open invitation for everybody. Come out and join us. Watch us live at the PWK Airport Signature. 8 p.m. is when the show goes live. You want to join us for dinner? What's that?
Central time.
Ah, yes. Central time. And if we always have like a little pre-radio show prep psych-up dinner at a local restaurant right down the street. So feel free to join us for that if you're in town.
Yeah, and if not, again, next week for sure, I want to allow for some call-ins because we get people that say they want to call in and it seems like we run out of time. And tonight we were using a technology that didn't have a number associated with it. So
yeah,
maybe next week we can pick that up because I really want to start doing that to meet our customers' needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're always trying to get better, and yeah, that's definitely on our list. So, well, very good.
Well, it's late where you're at. I think it's 11:01 where you're at.
Can you believe it? Our Kinger is probably in bed by now.
Yeah, unlike its pilots. But yeah. I'm saddened by the time, but it is that time for us to bid adieu, if you will.
We bid you adieu.
Yeah, so I hope you have a great week. And actually, to those of our listeners of the Jewish faith, wish you happy Hanukkah, which is going on this week.
Oh, great.
What are you doing? You're moving the Kinger over to the computer or something?
Yeah, it's moving into the heated hangar.
There you go.
Very good. Well, anyway,
all right, sir.
Thanks, Mark, for another great show. Thank you, Ian Hoyt of Heading 370, and look forward to hearing from the Aviation Access Group next week. But until then, happy flying, blue skies,
and tailwinds.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.